All right. In the process of putting the PowerPoint together, I shortened the title from that great big long thing we put in the original proposal. I'm Pat Ault. I teach at Towson University, and I'm also on a hospice board, but I don't get paid for it, so that's not really a problem here. We are having some difficulty with this interesting...
Yeah.
You just keep tapping it here?
Arrows.
Okay. All right. So I don't have any financial relationships relevant to this presentation. When we were putting the panel together, we were discussing different things to talk about, and I originally proposed to talk about, and I'm still going to talk about it somewhat, the sort of case study in a given state of hospices, you know, struggling with each other for patients. And that is really what it is, but in the course of the time since we proposed this, a lot more has happened. So the paper has wound up being, you know, sort of an evolutionary little presentation, a snapshot of what's going on right now, basically, because it's changed since we proposed it. It's always fun. Okay, so hospice in Maryland began in the mid-1980s with an Episcopal church and a group of actually Episcopal nuns establishing this hospice in Baltimore City. Gradually, other programs began, and as of 2013, there were 30 hospices licensed in the state. In order to operate in a particular county, as Susan said, they have to obtain a certificate of need from the Maryland Healthcare Commission. So part of what's been going on is changes at the Healthcare Commission level over the last year. So can you see that? Yeah, okay. Here's the basic characteristics of the existing hospices in the state. 24 of them are nonprofit, 6 are for-profit, 27 are Medicare certified, and here's the type of agency they are. 22 of them are freestanding, 4 are based in hospitals, 3 in home health agencies, and 1 in nursing homes. And anything at the bottom here, when it says MHCC, that's the Maryland Healthcare Commission, which is the big regulatory entity. Okay, so the most recent data is really from 2011, so about surveys and so forth. So here's some of the key factors that were involved at that point. 81% hospice care was being provided with Medicare funding, 3% with Medicaid, and other, or you know, which often meant charity, 16%, or perhaps under some kind of insurance if people had it that covered this kind of care. And the cause of death in the annual survey that year in the people in hospice, 43% of it was with cancer, 15% debility unspecified, interesting category, 14% other. I'm not quite sure what the difference between debility unspecified and other is. 12% dementia and 8% each heart and lung disease. And there's a reason why cancer is such a high percentage here, because in the CON law, historically, it had to do with, they were thinking that hospice, when they first wrote these laws, would be mostly for people with cancer. So they've actually had to change, as they changed the law, they've started looking at other reasons why people might wind up in hospice. So the state health plan is required to be updated every 5 years. It had been updated in 2007. There were a whole bunch of work groups and comment periods. I was actually on at least one of those work groups. And they put together a proposed new plan in 2012, which would have been the 5 years, but it took them another year to get it through all the different hoops and finally happening this year, like last month. I'm not kidding. So the utilization of hospice services, it has been growing, and again, when they're doing these planning ahead, they tend to think about it in terms of population over 65, and the projected expansion in that is they're projecting that's going to go up by 62% in the next, from 2010 to 2025. Again, it isn't always people over 65, but that's just one of the factors they put into the projection. So here's some of the trends in what's been happening. Between fiscal 2003 and 2011, The total number of patients who were under hospice care at some point in there went up by 75%. The number of patient days in hospice care went up by 281%, which is another interesting thing that people are looking at a lot. And you all know about it probably, you know, people getting into hospice. The question is it at the appropriate time? Are they really, you know, going into hospice care, getting better, going back out, coming back in again? It's not that tidy. And the number of deaths while under hospice went up by about 53% in that period of time. So there are a lot more patients, a lot more patient days. Also a jump in deaths, but not anywhere near the jump in the other two. So here's some of the complexities. I'm not a law professor, and I'm not going to try to explain the whole thing. Currently in the Maryland law, a hospice is defined as a healthcare facility. So certificate of need law was created in the first place for basically hospitals and, you know, buildings with beds. So they had to get permission for changes in their bed capacity. However, again, it's increasingly out of a facility and in a home or in a nursing home, in a facility that isn't owned by the hospice. And it's a little bit very fuzzy, actually, how exactly that's regulated. So there is actually an organization called the Hospice and Palliative Care Network of Maryland, which has been for the years trying to get some coordination among the different centers. Much more hospice than palliative care actually involved in that, though. And with a whole bunch of work groups again, the MHCC, which is the Healthcare Commission, proposed a change in this methodology, trying to figure out down the road how do we know better what we really need. So here's the proposed changes. So they changed the age of eligibility from all ages to 35 plus in terms of figuring out ahead of time how many potential hospice patients there would be in a county and did you need more or less facilities. They changed the diagnosis from cancer only to all diagnoses. And they changed the use rate in this law from hospice cancer deaths divided by population cancer deaths, again, thinking it's all about cancer, to all hospice patients divided by the population of potential hospice users. So the potential hospice users would be people over 35 with any kind of condition that might lead to death. And they also said they would start projecting the need at the jurisdiction level with 5 years from the base year to the target year. Certificate of need in Maryland is based at the county level, and Baltimore City is a county surrounded by Baltimore County, which is a different county. It can be very confusing. So it's all done by county. And the idea was that we would try to do these projections and figure out where we're going in 5 years. So, you probably can't see that one. I'm not sure how to make it bigger. I'm not sure I can. Probably can't. Well, this is a chart from the Maryland Healthcare Commission. And the top bar, this is talking about hospice use rates in 2011, which is hospice deaths over population deaths. Not necessarily in a hospice building, not necessarily in a nursing home, wherever. And the top bar is Baltimore County, which is not the same as Baltimore City. And 52% of the deaths that year in Baltimore County were under hospice care. And down at the very bottom is some of them smallish. The lowest rate was Caroline County with 17%. But Baltimore City, which is down toward the bottom here, was actually 23%. So less than half the rate in Baltimore County. They're quite different populations in terms of ethnicity and income and all that good stuff, insurance coverage. So Maryland as a whole in 2011, the little red lines down here, Maryland as a whole in 2011, 37% of deaths were in hospice. And Maryland Medicare, people covered by Medicare, was 39%. And in the U.S., people covered by Medicare in 2010, 44%. So these are some of the charts that the Maryland Healthcare Commission was putting together to try to sort of beef up their argument that we need to be looking more at whether we need to be allowing more hospice in different counties. So here's some variations that are also kind of important. In Baltimore City, which again is one of the poorest counties, Baltimore City and PG County are two of the poorer counties in the state, and also two of the more African-American counties in the state. Baltimore City, there are 9 providers with CONs, but 2 of them account for 72% of the market share. In Prince George's County, there are 9 providers, and 3 of them account for 78% of the market share. Two largest jurisdictions among the people, those with the low rates. So again, there are some with lower rates, but they're really tiny counties. And also, African Americans are much larger proportions of the population in these areas, and they are among the least likely groups to utilize hospice services, and that was one of the things that got emphasized in a lot of this as well. So I did a survey online and or oral, depending on what the person preferred, of folks in the system in Maryland, sort of seeing what they thought were the key issues these days for hospice in the state and where should we be going from here. Starting from lists of people who were on these work groups, these previous work groups, which is like 100 people if you add all the different work groups together, on hospice, palliative care, end-of-life counseling. And I got responses from, and again, it's not statistically valuable because it's, you know, sort of all over the map, so I didn't even try to make proper p-values and so forth. It's just a snapshot. Respondents included hospice directors, aging and disability advocates, state policymakers, and all kinds of other people with connections to hospice and palliative care services. Responses were all over the place, but they did kind of coalesce on certain concerns. One of the biggest ones was the lack of the education. This is not a surprise to anybody, I'm sure. Lack of education of the public and medical professions about hospice and palliative care. Lack of funding for programs caring for underinsured. Minority underutilization of hospice. Lack of choices for nursing home patients. If you're already a nursing home patient and you need hospice care, the for-profit providers are pretty much connected with the nursing homes. And so the for-profit provider, they just bring them in and that's who you get. You don't get a choice and say, whoops, wait a minute, I want a different hospice provider, because you're already in the nursing home. A lot of confusion about how end-of-life care fits in with accountable care organizations and how all this is going to play out down the road. Reluctance of medical providers to refer patients to hospice or palliative care services. Again, Maryland tends to be a little bit better educated state. There, you don't get as much talk about, you know, death panels or something, but there is still a lot of nervousness about it. The state plan provisions that were proposed, and it went through lots and lots of hearings and feedback, they were thinking that the variations in use rates, this is sort of the assumptions underneath their plan, the variations in use rates would change if there were more choices. This is sort of the capitalist version of hospice care. You know, if you have more choices, you'll be more likely to choose this kind of care. Another assumption was that education of the public is a key element, increasing interest in this. And the third one was changing the methodology for CON from use of care in the past to need, potential need down the road, would allow for potential usage in lower usage and higher diversity areas. Well, okay. So the regulatory agencies in Maryland are aiming to develop better quality measures and incorporate them into these CON projections. What's happening, though, is that the smaller hospices, and especially the really, really nonprofit hospices that take people whether they have insurance or not, are really having a hard time surviving. And even though the vast majority of these programs are nonprofit, still some of the larger ones would prefer to have people with insurance. And if someone shows up who isn't covered by Medicare, they tend to say, "Oh, you'd be happier over there at that other one," and send them over to the more sort of charitable organizations which are suffering because of it, suffering badly because of it. So some of those smaller charitable hospices are exploring partnerships with larger healthcare systems in order to survive, join up with a hospital system or some other way to keep going. And they're also holding educational sessions to reach out to underserved populations and dispel concerns. Actually, on Wednesday, which is tomorrow, yes? Tomorrow, the City Commission on Aging, in conjunction with African American Historically Black College in Baltimore, is holding an all-day thing aimed at clergy, and especially African American clergy, to get them to understand better the whole notion of hospice and how that works, and go, you know, distribute the information to their members. I won't be there because I'm flying back tomorrow late afternoon, but it does sound interesting. So here's some questions that I think are still out there hanging among the many, but just to get started. Does having more options lead to increased willingness to use hospice care? I haven't seen much evidence of that, but perhaps Susan's wonderful database will give me more less nervousness about it. In some of these counties, you know, yeah, they have 9 providers, but because the 2 largest ones have lots and lots of connections with the hospitals and the doctors and better PR possibilities, people are really basically getting told by their doctor, you need to go XYZ and get your care. This feeds into Bruce's presentation. Is it ethical for hospices to aggressively market to insured patients and avoid the uninsured? But it's out there hanging big time. They would never admit it, but it looks and smells like it. And are these for-profit hospices, which operate in the nursing homes, overusing the Medicare hospice benefit? Is that why we have this high proportion of people, of days, but not as nowhere near as high a proportion of deaths? They're just good questions. I don't have the answers, but I thought we could get started on talking about it when we finish the panel.